It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harbell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
For the right advice at the right time, Harbell and Collins with us from the law firm. Of course, Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben. All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, this Tuesday morning, Wes and I would like to converse a bit with our listeners about some of the added scrutiny, if you will, some of the new procedures in the clerk's office relative to the administration of an estate. Now, there's nothing, you know, shocking or untoward or anything of that nature that has changed here, Ben, but, you know, we've talked about a lot on this program in the last few years that, you know, Ben, there has been, you know, for better or for worse, and I'm not trying to judge this, a shift in our culture where there just seems to be more fraud, more misrepresentation, conflict, however we want to say this. And
right.
Of course, I'm not here this morning. That's a topic for someone else Talk Legal to talk about those kinds of things. But as a result of this, our clerk's offices across the state are being required to just be tighter, to tighten up the ship, to look at things a bit more carefully. For instance, let's just get right to it. Here is an example of this. We all know that many times when someone dies, there is a bank account with right of survivorship.
Right.
There is an added name on that account. And at some point, these clients went into a bank and they opened up an account with right of survivorship, be it a husband and wife, be it a father and his daughter, a mother and her son, whatever the case might be. For years, we would disclose that this account was with right of survivorship on the appropriate accountings with our clerks of court. And, of course, the executor would sign that under notary, and that would be the end of the story. Now, of course, that is not the end of the story in that the clerks are wanting to see the actual signature card, if you will, or the documentation at the bank that, of course, confirms that this account is joint with right of survivorship. Now, this is an added burden on our executors, Ben, because sometimes these accounts were open years ago.
Right. Right.
And the record is not easy to find at the bank.
And you know how banks have changed.
The banks have changed their names. They've changed their
corporate structure.
Sometimes even the document doesn't exist. It is an added burden. Now, that is just one example. Another example is that the clerks are going to want to see the checks that have been written to close an account after the decedent's death. And, of course, any disbursements that have been made through the estate, they are going to want to see checks. And, of course, we all know that the banks now don't necessarily banks now do not enclose in the bank statement the canceled checks like they used to years ago. So our clients are having to ask for these checks, acquiesce them from the different banking institution, and get them. Again, that's two very quick examples of where the clerks are being required to ask legitimate questions of our executors and require that they present supporting documentation that supports and affirms the accounting. The accounting is not, on its face, sufficient anymore.
Right. Okay.
So in the past, I mean, you used to have these accountings, and they were signed and sworn and affirmed and under oath, and this is true and this is accurate. and that was sufficient, as Cecil just indicated.
So somebody would have to prove otherwise if they wanted to fight those.
So all of this back documentation, the bank records, you know, really we're talking about financial records more than anything else. It could be bank records, stock records, so on and so forth, which is sometimes very difficult to get, you know, because it could be something that's 20 years old we're looking for, you know, as far as when an account was opened. That kind of, you know, higher level of scrutiny is what we're dealing with on a daily basis. Now, you know, maybe on, you know, one file, you've got to get two or three extra documents. I mean, that's kind of the tip of the iceberg. It's a lot more to it than that. And, you know, but in our office, we're handling a heck of a lot of estates. We had to do so much of estate work. When you add that level of scrutiny to every single one of those, it gets to be a lot. And it's also a lot on the clerk's office. The clerk's office now here in Carter County at least has more employees than it's ever had. And frankly, I don't know with what I'm seeing how the unrepresented party without an attorney goes and checks all these boxes and satisfies the court. I don't know, because it's a difficult process even for, you know, seasoned attorneys to handle. So it's a new day with regard to estate administration in the state of North Carolina, because the procedure is much more complicated than it's ever been.
Does this also change now your estate planning? I mean, do you want to have copies of those signature cards? Can you get certified copies, for example?
Well, no, because, you know, Ben, those things change.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're administering estates for last wills and testaments that we created 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago. You know, it was maybe with a different bank at that time. People are always changing these account registrations or anything of that nature. So we've always discussed with our client during the planning stage, their account registrations, their beneficiaries of their annuities, their life insurance, their IRAs. The title of their real property, is it tenants by entirety between husband and wife, or is it tenants in common? These things are discussed during the estate planning conference, but of course, then time, we then have time, you see, and over the course of the next 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, those circumstances change.
Yes.
So,
now one thing I do want to add to what Ben said is asked with regard to, does that change your estate planning? Well, you know, this heightened level of scrutiny in the probate field has started a conversation among attorneys about the necessity of using trust more frequently in standard estate planning. Because, you know, if you contrast North Carolina to many other states, for example, I was dealing with some clients last week with some property in Virginia. And in the event that they passed in Virginia and this property passed, then the probate fee or tax in Virginia would be over $100,000 for that estate.
Wow.
In North Carolina, it would be about $2,000. So in the event that they lived in North Carolina and their estate was probated here in North Carolina, given the fact that the real estate in Virginia was in an LLC, it's very low. So their planning would be, if they lived in Virginia, to use a trust, because then that bypasses that $100,000 expense.
Right.
Okay. Now, as we've talked about on the program many times before, you don't really use a trust unless there's a reason to use a trust. Well, there's potentially becoming more of a reason in North Carolina to use a trust, because if you put your assets in a trust, place them in a inter vivos trust during your lifetime, and that is how they pass under the terms of the trust, then those assets fall outside of this higher level of scrutiny we've just talked about.
Right.
There's that conversation has at least begun in this state because of the complexities we're dealing with and the added, you know, aggravation and expense related there too.
Because we've talked about probate not being egregious here, and that so many times you can go yourself and get for a small estate can walk through it. But now it's changing.
It is changing. Yep.
Those files, Ben, are Do we need to take a break?
Yeah, we're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk about that in just a moment here. And if you have questions, it's a good time to call 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Call and we'll get your questions answered here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, and we're talking about some of the heightened sense of scrutiny of estates.
Exactly. Now, Ben, some of these smaller files that you just mentioned, where historically an executor, you know, a son, a daughter, a grandchild, was able to make their way through the file without the having to hire a lawyer.
Right.
We, of course, see any number of these folks in our office through the years. We've seen hundreds of them, and we just say to them, you know, Mr. Jones, we will be glad to help you, but you really are able to handle this on your own. The account is joint with right of survivorship. The property is tenants by entirety with your spouse. I really think you'll be okay. You go ahead to the clerk's office, make your appointment, and if there are any I's that need to be dotted, we'll help you if we need to. But usually we don't have to help that client.
Right.
Okay, there's not the estate is not large, and they're able to make their way through it. This is becoming less frequent now because what is happening is that these smaller estates are getting told that they need these requirements. They need these underlying documentation. It's taking them longer than they thought that it would. It's taking them more time than they thought. And as a result of this, after a couple of months of being in the process, maybe 3 months, 4 months, they now are calling. We're getting more and more calls from these folks out of the blue saying, you know, I've got this estate and it's ongoing, but I'm really having problems now. I need you to come in here and help me with this. I didn't think that I needed a lawyer, but now I'm seeing that I do. Mm-hmm. And so so we are getting more of that. Now, I want to pick up on something that Wes brought up because I was absolutely going to talk about that. I think we might talk about this again next week as well, Ben, and go into a little bit more detail. But historically, you have heard me on this program for years say, Ben, that at our office and other good lawyers' offices, we do not put people into the, quote, revocable living trust.
Right.
Just to avoid probate.
Mm-hmm.
At our office, we always needed a more legitimate purpose to, if you will, charge a client for a trust and create a trust and go to that that effort. We needed a legitimate reason. If there was an estate tax concern, if there maybe was a minor child, if there was a spendthrift issue, a handicapped child, a child with special needs, the list kind of goes on and on. Second marriages, there were lots of reasons why we would do a trust, but we needed to find one of those reasons. And if those reasons didn't exist, sometimes the client would say, well, but I understand that I need to create a trust for the limited purpose of avoiding probate.
Right.
And our answer historically was, well, no, Mr. Jones, we don't really need to worry about that. We'll get the probate in our state is friendly. It is you know, efficient. It doesn't take that long. It's not that expensive. And you will be fine with that. We don't need to create a trust just for the limited purpose of probate. Now, of course, what is beginning to happen is we're questioning ourselves on this, okay, due to some of these added burdens that get placed on our fiduciary at the time of death. And particularly in files where there are multiple accounts. Or multiple properties, larger estates, maybe moderate to large estates. You know, keep in mind that if a person has five or six accounts, that's five or six sets of these documentation that we're going to need that we talked about earlier. And so we are beginning to alter our estate planning documents. Again, this is a work in progress. This is something that is just now happening, which is why we're speaking about it on Let's Talk Legal this morning. These are burdens that have begun to be placed on our executors in, say, the last year or so.
Right.
And it takes a while for the good estate planning lawyers to kind of catch up. Now, this is not just to Carter. I don't know this. And again, Wes and I aren't laying any blame anywhere.
Uh-huh.
I think that, as I prefaced at the very beginning of the program, Ben, this is for the protection of the general public,
mm-hmm.
that the clerk's offices, and it's not just Carteret County, Onslow, Craven, New Hanover, Wake, Cumberland, all of the counties are requiring these to see the signatures of joint with right of survivorship. If there is an assertion on the counting that property is held in a certain manner, they're wanting to see the deed.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they're wanting to see substantiation of the postures and positions that the executor is taking on the various accountings. They're wanting to see substantiation of that, confirmation of that. This is not a bad thing, Ben,
mm-hmm.
at all.
Right.
Okay. This is kind of, if you will, kind of the reaction to where we are.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. Yeah.
It's not a bad thing. It's not something that we are blaming anyone for.
Right.
Okay.
But it does have the potential to slow down the administration.
It does. Yes. Absolutely. It does. And to create more frustration for the fiduciary at the time. And therefore the need to say, well, I just don't know what they're talking about. I think that we're going to need to hire a lawyer in this estate to handle this. And so we are seeing this routinely, and we will begin to continue to shift our estate planning, as you mentioned, to utilize more revocable trust when we are analyzing the file and we see that, wow, is this ever going to be a difficult file for the administrator of this estate. Another requirement, Ben, is a receipt and release agreement, if you will, from the various heirs.
Right.
The clerks are now requiring that if the will discloses that the tangible personal property is divided equally between the four children, then they want a document from each child saying that they received
mm-hmm.
their share of the tangible personal property and that they are satisfied with what they received under the will. Well, Ben, this is just a real difficult thing to get in many files.
Right.
When you've got more than one mm-hmm. heir of an estate, you've got the opportunity for someone to be not satisfied with what necessarily they received, even down to, the splitting of the teacups in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And we are now being required to get these receipts from these heirs. And we sometimes have heirs that just simply from the get-go do not cooperate. They are,
right.
they are at odds with their brother or sister. They haven't
right.
spoken to them for years. They did not attend the funeral, et cetera, et cetera. How in the world do we expect to get this kind of documentation from someone that is alienated from the family?
We can't make them sign.
No, we can't.
We'll have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal. Again, your questions are welcome at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. We're talking about the heightened scrutiny that estates are getting now in the clerk's offices across the state. And as we do that, it makes perhaps a less probate friendly, perhaps, for some estates around the country, around the, compared to others.
So, Ben, it does, as you profoundly mentioned, it does relate back to the estate planning conference. Because suppose you're in an estate planning conference and you're told by Mr. and Mrs. Jones that, listen, now I do have three children. I want to leave everything equally to the three children. But my son, I don't know, you know, he left and he lives out in Oregon now, and he has no contact really with his other two sisters who live here. We really, you know, they are just estranged. We don't know why, but we just, they have never really gotten along.
Right.
I mean, we hear this a lot, Ben.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Siblings many times, for whatever reason, don't get along.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, a little thought goes into a lawyer's brain like mine now.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So now if I leave the tangible personal property equally to the three children, I'm going to need this son in Oregon to sign a receipt and release agreement. And I'm being told by the client now that they are estranged.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this would then be where I would shift the terminology of the document to say that I leave my tangible personal property to my executor to be distributed within the discretion of my executor.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
There's a classic example of where estate planning is meeting estate administration. And we would, in fact, alter the document because we're going to have a problem getting a receipt and release agreement from this child in Oregon, if you will, relative to tangible. His mother and father have just told me that.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I can see any number of them. You know, you're splitting up the duck carving collection, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I got the bad ones, you got the good ones. You know?
Yes.
So it's any number of things that would be petty, but would be expensive to resolve.
Yep.
Right. Well, you know, the requirements that the clerks are imposing, totally understandable. It's needed, probably been needed for a long period of time. That's just where society is. But right now we're having some growing pains with regard to that. And I think the clerk's office is having growing pains too, because, you know, they're wanting to meet that certain level of accounting and proof, but that doesn't necessarily always line up with what's going on in the real world in people's lives.
Right.
You know, this receipt and release thing, that's the perfect example where it's just in certain circumstances impossible to get them, you know, to these beneficiaries to sign these documents. So, but that's one of the boxes that the clerk needs to check. So where does that leave us? Does that leave us in a place where certain estates never get closed because you don't get those?
Mm-hmm.
No, that's illogical. That doesn't make any sense. You know, kind of thinking out loud with regard to that, I think that what's going to have to happen with those type situations where you can't get a receipt and release agreement, whether it's because the brothers and the sisters don't get along, or maybe there's an heir we can't find, or whatever it ends up being.
Right.
We probably would have to notice up a hearing, like a motion to close the estate, give proper notice to everyone, which could be under the rules of civil procedure, Rule 4.
Exactly.
Notice with regard to all of that could be noticed by publication, notice in the newspaper with regard to that, for where the last place that this person lived, have a hearing before the clerk for purposes of showing why we don't have everything that really you want us to have. And then hopefully the clerk would then enter that order. In the event the clerk doesn't enter that order, then that takes us to the next step of having to file an appeal. And then that goes to Superior Court. Superior Court judge hears it. So, you know, it's not about just getting a piece of paper.
Right.
It's a lot more to it than that.
You want to find out more, you want to call on the folks at Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law, and you can reach them at 252-726-9050, 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and online at harvellandcollins.com.